Blog Talk Radio.
Oh,
good evening, everybody.
She just walked in and said, "Guy, you got to get on the call."
Yeah. Got your own human alarm clock. Welcome to the Tuesday night. Usually every other week, but this time it's going to be 3 weeks till the next one call. It is the 22nd day of August. It's hard to believe.
It is.
It's the last Tuesday night call we'll have in August. Our next one will be September 12th, everybody. Please make note of that, and I will make note again later on. But I hope everybody's had a great week. And see if we've got some good news. I got some good news. I'm gonna let that fly. But before we do anything, we have to have Mr. Jesse get his patent package out and do the disclaimer.
Yeah. Hey guys, welcome to the call. If you're seeking legal advice, you need to hang up and go elsewhere because we don't give legal advice. We don't even know what that is. And of course, that's available all over the place. They're called attorneys. So if you want that, go get you one. Again, here we're just going to have fun discussing all of our situations and our outcomes and our strategies that we've used to successfully win cases. And in some cases, lose. So just share that with you right out of the gate. If that's what you're looking for, you need to roll. So with that being said, good enough.
That's it. It's not fancy, but it is patented, and it gets the idea across. You know, if you're looking for that legal advice, we have no clue what it is, so please look elsewhere.
That's right.
Oh, dear. Well, I just went and looked at that Bitcoin Cash chart because I've been working on other stuff here, and it's just doing its dance. And what,
yeah,
are you making some noise there, Jesse, or is that in your phone line or what? Because you were kind of a little muffled or something.
No, I hear you guys clear.
Yeah, well, that's not the bigger problem. The bigger problem was hearing you.
Can you hear me or not?
Yeah, I can. That was better when you were talking there, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Well,
but anyway,
I
you
think,
saw it. Back over 700, David.
Yeah, I know. Larry, is that you at 0376?
Probably.
Oh, probably. Okay. Good evening. How are you?
You expect me to know my own number? I'm good.
Well, if you don't know it, I sure probably won't know it, seeing as how you switch numbers on me. Oh, dear. Well, let's see. I'm looking to see if we've got John, and yes, Sir John is with us. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
How's your arm
I still
doing?
Hear some hissing and popping on someone's line, but
yeah.
My arm
yeah,
is doing much better. I have a doctor's
yeah, I think it's
appointment
Jesse's
tomorrow.
Yeah.
And,
oh, you got doctor's
we'll see what
tomorrow?
Happens. Yep, 8 weeks.
Wow, it's hard to believe it's been that long already. How time flies when you're having
end.
Fun,
not,
right?
Not at my end.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Anyways, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I hope the news is good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yep. All right. Well, you know, we always start with good news, and a very simple reason why we do that, everybody. It's because there's enough garbage flying around out there, and especially these days, there's just about everything flying around out there is garbage. So if there's any good things happening, we want to be able to let people know about that, things that generally are related to our activities, our cases, or cases of people associated with our group. And I have some good news. I can say that the lawsuit that I had filed in May that was a TCPA lawsuit was settled last week. We reached an agreement, and I'm not at liberty to expound any more on that. So I'm not going to, but I'm perfectly satisfied with the end result, and we reached a settlement after some negotiating, and onward and upward. That's what we do. So that's, for me, that's another one in the hopper, one of many. So do any of our moderators have any good news? What's that?
I said good job.
Well, you just, you follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road. You know, and we lay out the yellow brick road, don't we?
Exactly.
Yeah. All you got to do is become a member of the site and follow the information that we've put in there to help everybody accomplish the same things that we accomplish when we litigate.
Exactly. You know,
maybe there's people out there that have little to no experience with this. Well, guess what? We all started at that same place. We all started not knowing anything about this. We may be ahead of you in our studies. That doesn't mean you can't learn it. We were able to learn it. I'm not the brightest bulb on the string. But if I was able to learn this, to study and learn how to do things, how to negotiate, how to write pleadings, how to make arguments, I think most other people can. I'm not going to say everybody can because that's not true. And I don't believe that. But most people can. It just depends on, as I've said so many times on these calls, how bad do you want it? How bad do you want to get a check? How bad do you want to be a winner? How bad do you want to hold somebody accountable for violating your rights? That's going to determine what you do. We'll help you. We'll help you get the pieces of the puzzle together, but you have to do it. We don't do it for you. And that's the way this whole thing works. So do any of our moderators have any good news?
Well, you know me. I just kept filing lawsuits.
Okay. So you sound like me.
They filed the foreclosure, and now I think I'm up to, let me see, five independent suits. Against the attorney's firm, the plaintiff, which is WISPA, the servicing company. Who else? There's one more. I don't know. There's five. There's so many. So, pretty fun.
Well, now, are those individual suits, or are they all defendants
in
the same suit?
No. All defendants in separate suits. You know, for purposes of making the attorney's life miserable, we filed against him in the federal and state in small claims. Okay, so the chances are he'll have it removed or slim to none because it's a personal deal. And then we filed against the firm with just the Florida, not the federal. And then we hit WISPA, which is Wilmington Savings Trust Fund, whatever the hell it is, with the small claims only, and we hit Shell Point with small claims only, but we've presented the 16 or 17 phone calls to see if they want to just write one big check. So, you know.
And see, for everybody listening, this is all strategy. You know, there's more to what we do than, you just go file a lawsuit against somebody. Or if you got a bunch of people, you just file one lawsuit against them. There's certain reasons why you sue certain people in a certain court. And it's all about strategy. And that's how you come out ahead. And that's exactly what Jesse's doing.
It's all about strategy. Every bit of it. Every bit of it.
Absolutely right.
The biggest reason is conflict of interest. So you sue them separately, and then in the lawsuit you allege that, of course, as acting as an agent, that And the servicer clearly explained everything to him before, right? They gave him the foreclosure. They obviously told him, hey, you know, don't go around cancel, and yada, yada, yada. So what you want to do is just create a big conflict of interest there. So they're pointing their fingers at each other because they don't have a choice but to do so. It's not even a matter of choice. They don't have a choice. They have to do it, which is awesome.
Yeah, this noise we got in the call, Jesse, is coming from your phone because it's varying. Is you're either moving or talking?
No, I'm sitting on a couch.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but there's varying as you were. Yeah, I don't know. There's something funky. You're out there in the boonies, aren't you?
No, not at all. I'm right in the middle of town over here, and I got a very low signal in here though. In a hotel.
Yeah, that's probably the problem. Yeah, I just want people to be able to hear everything you're hearing, and I don't know about the other moderators on here, but at times I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you.
Me too.
Okay, so let me hang up.
Okay.
I'll call you back, David.
Okay, all right. So Jesse will be calling back in a second. He's on a cell phone, obviously, because he's not at home. He's out of town. Well, he's on a cell phone all the time anyway. I mean, I don't think he has a landline. But anyway, we'll get him back here in a minute. I don't think we have anybody else or other moderators didn't pipe up with any good news. So what we will do is tell everybody that has a question for us tonight, or well, no, let's retract that statement. Anybody out there that has good news, go ahead and hit the one key on the keypad on your phone, and that will put you in the queue. And now we'll try and see how Jesse's audio is now.
I don't know. Is it any better?
I don't know. We got noise on the call right away as soon as you got on.
Yeah, that's so weird.
Hey, you're not holding
mute
your tongue.
Mute me,
right?
I got a question for me, David. That'd be the easiest thing.
What's that?
I said mute me. So there's a question for me.
No, there isn't any question for you at the moment. I was telling everybody to, if they had good news out there, to hit the one key and put themselves in the queue, and we'll take their good news, and then we will go to Q&A after that. So
yes, what I said was mute me until you have a question.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. now I got to run up and down the board here because you're way down the board. So... we'll just leave you on there. If you make too much noise, I'll just disconnect you.
Yeah, I'm just sitting on a couch, so I can't make any noise.
Yeah, well, it's your next door neighbor in the room that's making the noise. All right, we're going to go to 973 and see if we got some good news here. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
No, I made a mistake. I'm trying to ask a question.
Okay. All right, we'll come back to you.
Okay.
All right, we're going to go to 321. Have you got some good news for us?
Oh, actually, it's not mine, but I do like your style, Jesse. Just to lawyer off as much as you can. just keep doing, people. Sooner or later, you get to the bottom of it.
You got it.
But now my friend who's got the TCPA case, and there's a motion for judgment as a matter of law, and the court converted it to a summary judgment. But she went to the doctor yesterday down here in Florida, and the intake sheet from this doctor was prior express consent. It stated that a third-party debt collector may call you with artificial voice, pre-recorded messages, and use an ATGS.
Was that the same doctor she went to before?
No. The other one was a dentist, the one that the
lawsuit. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But still, it prior express consent, obviously, if it says on there, you know, we're going to call you with ATDS and all that, and you agree to it, then that's what I consider prior express consent, not implied.
Yeah, because
that's absolutely correct.
To, and if you must agree to that as a condition of receiving treatment, make sure that you thereafter rescind your consent, and preferably in writing.
Well,
oh,
the
yeah.
other thing is that they were talking about, you know, before they were talking about prior express consent because she filled out an intake form. But the main case down here in Florida is the Mays case that everybody is aware of. And
right.
if you read the 32-page appellate decision, it keeps on talking about when she signed the hospital consent, they gave her the notice of privacy booklet along with that, which said that they can give it to a third party and so on and so forth. And everywhere in the Mays appellate decision, it states, if on your intake form, it states that they could call you based on billing. Well, her dentist was, she didn't use insurance, so she had to pay as she went. So when she filled out the intake form, it was simply her name, address, cell phone number, you know, for the doctor, the dentist to call her. But
yeah.
she didn't have any anticipation of a debt collector because she had to pay before the dentist would do the service.
Right.
So what were they calling her for?
Yeah.
Well, the dentist went ahead and made a tooth for her without her authorization.
Oh.
And that's what, yeah, so that sheds a whole new light on this case.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So now the dentist wants to collect money for unsolicited and unapproved work that
Correct.
She didn't order or agree to, and then hide behind an intake form to have her harassed on the telephone by a debt collector on a debt she does not owe. That pretty much covers it.
Has anybody ever seen an exhibit that showed she doesn't have a tooth?
Oh,
boy.
Goodness.
Oh, yeah. See, that's new information that we got. I was not aware of those circumstances in her case until you just mentioned that.
Nor
well,
was
it
I.
It would be pretty easy for her to go to another dentist just for the purpose of that dentist to do an exam and sign a statement that that tooth is not in her mouth.
Right, I was just going to take a picture, and she's missing a front tooth. So, I mean,
yeah, but that doesn't really prove anything because she could have lost it. Since then, my brother-in-law had a tooth made four times, and four times he got in a fight and lost that tooth.
Oh, true.
Again, you know.
Jeez.
So if she goes and she visits a dentist, that dentist can tell by the dental x-rays, if there has been, I assume this was an implant?
Yeah, root canal.
Okay, if there has been a prior tooth inserted that has been removed, a dentist can state that.
And that's a good idea. It was funny because she was, I you know, we were talking about the Mays decision, and we pulled up the appellate decision, and she was reading it, and she said, well, they keep talking about billing, you know, if you fill out the intake form on the bottom, it says if you're anybody wants to bill you, they can call you with this, that, and the other thing. But on hers, it was a simple intake form with name, address, and telephone number.
Right, because she was a cash and carry customer.
Correct. And
wow.
this is the first time she brought that up, and that has been 5 years ago.
Oh my goodness. This could turn into
yeah.
a really interesting case.
Well, if nothing else, she takes a selfie showing the tooth missing and then does an affidavit stating, you know.
Right, that's
yeah.
a short course, and if it goes all the way to trial, go get the dentist statement. Not,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
a different dentist.
She's writing her affidavit as we speak. The other thing they keep saying is that she, every time they called her, She either did not answer or went to the voicemail. Well, she answered the calls probably out of 44 calls, probably 10 or 15 calls.
So actually, she didn't authorize to be billed for anything.
No, in fact, the only way for her to have services rendered was if she paid in advance.
Exactly, that was the deal. Wow.
Yeah. Well, she needs to very fully explain that to the court, that, you know, there is no debt. And,
well, and that's the problem. She didn't put that in the original complaint and in the motion for...
Wait. You got to go back to everything hinges upon a transaction initiated by the consumer. She can prove that there was never any transaction initiated by the consumer. There was credit transaction. She never entered into any credit agreement, period.
Correct. And that's a good part of the defendant's motion for judgment as a matter of law, is that she owed a debt.
Well, it has to be.
To me, irrelevant about the TCPA, though. That has nothing to, you know, they call it with pre-recorded messages.
That's true, but consent to call by a debt collector is moot in itself when there is no debt to be calling on.
Right.
Yep, that's just like when I got all the calls from Midland. How could there be consent when there wasn't any debt that I owed?
Yeah. You know, they want to make it all about a debt. Well, fine, but you're trying to make it about a debt that never existed. So totally moot point.
The dentist sent her a bill based on the fact that she made the tooth, but everything, all the other services prior to that had to be paid in advance before the services were rendered. So why would she make the tooth not having the money in advance when all the other services were paid?
Yeah, that's very suspect.
Yep. And, again, you just got to clearly articulate that in the arguments.
Yeah, that's what she's working on. Like I said, she's actually come a long way. She's been doing a lot of work on this.
It sounds like it, and I'm very proud of her. She's stepping up to the plate.
Yep, that's good.
And by the way, Dave, Cindy says hello.
Oh, out in Utah?
Yeah, she says your phone's been blowing up today. All because of some crazy guy named Dave Mack.
I'm really glad people are calling. I'm really glad people are calling. Oh man, I'll tell you. That's good. I'm going to want to get feedback. I'll have to talk to her in you know, several weeks, see what she can tell me.
Yeah,
that
so
is
right
if
now
she doesn't
my
call
Yahoo,
me.
My Yahoo is giving me grief. I'm going to pull up some of the quotes that I took out, that me and her have taken out of the Mays case, and I'm going to go over them, a couple of things with you guys, if you don't mind. But I'll save that and see if anybody else has any good news for.
All right. Well, there's no more hands up for good news. So, did you want me to come back to you and we'll just go into Q&A, or are you ready to do that now?
No, I just clicked on my Yahoo account. It says they're having technical difficulties, so I can't pull up what I was going to be discussing with you guys. So come back to me,
Liz. All right. Well, what I'll do is I'll go ahead and I'll mute you and hit the one key, which should take you out of the queue, and then when you're ready to get back in, just hit it again.
Okay, sounds good.
All righty.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, it's Q&A time. All of you good people that have got questions for us, now's your time. Hit the one key on the keypad on your phone, and we will take your questions. And I want to remind everybody, don't sit around and wait and then piddle around and don't do anything. And then at the last minute go after I say, well, we don't have any more people with their hand up, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up the call for tonight. And have all these people jump in at the last second. Don't do that, because you'll probably be out of luck. So if you got questions, that's what we're here for. Let's go ahead and go over those questions right now. We're going to go to 973. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
I've been a member for a few months now, and I did the audit with Karen, and I just got a few questions about it. The first one is, Wells Fargo sold my mortgage and my note and my mortgage to Fannie Mae. But I'm paying Wells Fargo Home Mortgage the note. So do I put them into my FDCPA or do I leave them out as one?
Who's collecting on it? That's the important question.
Wells Fargo N.A. was collecting on it, but then when I went into the trial modification, they gave me to Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. But Wells Fargo N.A. is trying to do the foreclosure.
Yeah, that's who you have to put in there. I'm assuming they got it while it was in profit, right?
Wells Fargo N.A. was my original lender, but they sold it to Fannie Mae. But they got a blank endorsement on my note that they sent me in my QWR. So she gave me another QWR to send to them, but I didn't do it. I just did it today. I just got the consultation today, so. She gave me another QWR to send to him, but I'm trying to do the FDCPA lawsuit, and I'm trying to find out, do I put both of them in there, or do I just put Wells Fargo N.A.?
You can't put Wells Fargo. You have to use Wells Fargo N.A. because Wells Fargo is your original, and they sold it off. So you can't include them. They'll be dismissed immediately.
So even though they sold it, does it make them a third party?
No, because they sold it. Did they violate anything?
I mean, they trying to do the foreclosure, so I'm surmising they violated anything.
They said Wells Fargo Home Servicing was doing the foreclosure.
No, Wells Fargo Home Servicing was collecting, but Wells Fargo N.A. is trying to do the foreclosure.
Well, they sold it off to Fannie Mae. How are they getting to do the foreclosure?
That's what I'm trying to say. So is there anything under the FDCPA that I can attack them with?
Not for Wells Fargo. You can't include Wells Fargo in there.
So.
You follow? Now, the only, John, what are you thinking? Wells Fargo sold it off to Fannie, and then obviously, either Fannie sold it back to Wells. Is that what that is?
No, it is. Well, it's a blank endorsement.
That's what I'm curious to.
There's a blank endorsement to Wells from Wells Fargo
nobody. But listen, you can only be a debt collector if they take it while it's defaulted under the FDCPA. So once Wells Fargo sold it off or transferred it and Home Servicing started the servicing on it, they took it while it was defaulted, so they are considered debt collectors. Wells Fargo is your original creditor. They cannot be considered a debt collector. Now, the only question is, if it's sold off and then taken back, would they be considered a debt collector at that point? And I know there's been cases on that, and I want to say no.
I tend to agree with that, unless Wells Fargo was using any name other than the true name of the original creditor, like if that's Wells Fargo Bank, but they were trying to collect under Wells Fargo Servicing LLC or something, then the servicing company really can't foreclose, but they'd be using a different name than the bank. Only the holder ability to collect, with the ability to enforce, can actually file a lawsuit to collect.
That's right.
Yeah, and I'm understanding that, but there's a blank endorsement from Wells Fargo to nobody. Fannie Mae saying they own it, but I filed.
If Fannie Mae claims ownership, then sue Fannie Mae too.
See, now this is what we were selling, because in my complaint they don't mention Fannie Mae, period. So she was saying, okay.
Fannie Mae says they own it, don't they?
Exactly. So she was saying, okay, so well,
bring them on in there.
But Wells Fargo said they own it too.
Well, you can't have two owners. That's why you need to bring them to the party.
And if it's blank, you don't know when the transfer supposedly happened.
That's right.
You don't know when it happened, and you don't know who it happened, you know, with who the counterparty was. So any representations that someone makes now are essentially deceptive, because to the unsophisticated consumer, as far as you know, the boogeyman could own it.
That's right.
And that's my point. So is it that unfair? Unfair is deceptive by collecting
no,
by unfair deceptive
no,
man.
No, I wouldn't use that. It's just hard to prove, and you don't have enough experience to go down that road. It's a tough one. There's a lot of easier lower hanging.
I mean,
you can start. I got a
full complaint that doesn't mention Fannie Mae, period.
What does it say in the complaint? Who's the plaintiff?
It says Wells Fargo N.A. Now, I did the extension of time, but then I did the steps. So I'm up on the steps. I might not sound like I'm up on them, but I am. I did the steps. I did the extension of time. Then I did the Fannie Mae lookups. I did all that, and then I did the motion to dismiss. So now, in a motion to dismiss, they answered it saying, "Well, they answered it saying that now they're saying that they're the holder and the owner of the note. But before they were saying they just was the servicer.
Saying they're the owner now?
Wells Fargo and they saying that they're the holder and the owner now. In the answer to my motion to dismiss, now I put the printout of the Fannie Mae website look up in there, in the motion to dismiss. Now they saying that they own it. So I talked to Fannie Mae, they said they own it, but I sent Fannie Mae a QWR. We knew they weren't going to answer it. I knew that, but I just put it on record that I sent it. I knew they weren't going to answer. We already knew that. But
did you go to their website?
I went to their website. And it says they own it. Now they will
get anything in writing.
From Fannie Mae.
Yeah.
No.
They own it?
They said, yeah, I got the printout from the Fannie Mae lookup. I did the printout from Fannie Mae lookup. They said they own it. They said that I got the date they bought it and everything. But now when I put the motion to dismiss in, now Wells Fargo answers and say they own it and they hold the note.
Did they provide any documentation to support that assertion?
No, and that's another thing. Even with in my motion to dismiss, they didn't put a note or a mortgage into their complaint. So I said, you filed it, you ain't have no grounds to file it, you ain't attached nothing to it. Like, you ain't attached no note, no mortgage to the complaint. So I don't know what's going on. So they like, well, we don't got to attach a note or no mortgage to the complaint. And they answered to my, I don't know if it's going to get denied or what, but you know, it's going to get denied, but.
All right. Well, just hang on. Let me say something here. Your response to their opposition to your motion should argue that there's a direct conflict. They say they own it, yet provide no information to substantiate that, whereas you have provided evidence to the court showing that Fannie Mae owns it. Therefore, the case should be dismissed.
Yeah, that's a good approach.
So,
another thing that you want to do in your response to that is to put an affidavit with it stating that document that you put in showing that Fannie Mae owns it, that you okay, you stated that you went to their website and you did that, right?
I did that in my affidavit. I put it in the affidavit.
Okay,
all right.
So
I put it in
the
affidavit saying that this is the information I found. And I looked at the endorsement. I found out that the person that did the endorsement worked for Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. So I went to Lichen, pulled up their page, and showed what his job description was. And that job description didn't say nothing about endorsing the note. And he worked for the Home Mortgage, so how could he endorse it for Wells Fargo N.A.? I put all that in the affidavits and put all it did, and this is what they replied was. So I could reply to their reply?
Oh, yeah. You have a chance to reply to their opposition to your motion. You bet. You get the last word.
So do I do that before it's heard, or do I do it after it's heard?
I don't understand what you said. Say
before,
that again.
Before it's heard. You got to go
before it's heard? Oh,
heard.
Yeah. Heck, yeah. You got to get your 2 cents worth
tell
in
you
now.
How many days you have?
Tomorrow is supposed to be getting heard. So I blew that.
Well, you don't know unless you type it. If you can type it up tonight and file it in first thing in the morning. If it's being heard, is there a hearing scheduled?
They saying it's supposed to be heard. They didn't get. I tried to. I was a little bit, you know, weaving through the lines, and I didn't put in for an oral argument. I just put let them because I thought I had all the proof that I needed. But now that they saying that they own it, I didn't understand. So I'm thinking like, okay, if they saying that they own it, and the judge see I got proof that they don't own it, like what could he possibly do? Like, but I
well,
understand
okay,
what I'm,
but
I'm working
when
with everybody.
When is it? When is it supposed to be heard?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow was supposed to be
well,
they're supposed to do whatever they got
yeah,
to do. And, but I'm thinking
you
like,
could try. You could try doing an argument to it and try putting it in tomorrow, but I don't know if the court's going to recognize it because the other side, that would be a you know surprise on the other side. They probably won't entertain it, but you don't know if you don't try.
Okay, so, I mean, even if I do it tomorrow, I still will have to get mailed to them, and that's going to take time. So I think I blew
well,
that,
no,
that,
you
that
file it with the you file it with the court, and you mail them a copy. But if you file it with the court, then it'll be in the court file, but you'd want to have that filed the moment the court court opens its doors so that it gets in the in your case file so it's there for
and
the court to look at.
And drop
right.
a courtesy copy off at Chambers.
So I went
the judge's chambers at the courthouse. You can drop off a courtesy copy. Once you file that, have your envelope prepared. Have a stamped copy from the clerk that has the stamp on there. Drop it in the envelope and drop it off at judge's chambers as courtesy copy. That brings his attention or her attention to it.
Even though it's going to be heard, okay, so I can try that. So other than that, so as far as the federal suit, do not put Wells Fargo N.A. in the period.
No.
So not even for it ain't Tiller, but the other one when they sold a note and didn't inform me in the 30 days, don't put them in that either?
No, because you could do, if it's a state law claim, you could do that in small claims court. You don't want to do it in federal court. You don't want to bring them in there because they're going to argue that they're the original creditor and the FDCPA specifically excludes original creditors. You're going to get in a law. It's going to detract your attention, and it's going to sour the judge, and he'll be more likely to dismiss the whole thing. You want to sue the lawyers. You want to sue the lawyers, and you want to sue whoever else there is, but not the original creditor.
Okay, but even for the new law that Obama put in about if you transfer, trade, or sell a note, that the mortgage is supposed to get a note written notice within 30 days, I should be able to get that off
that
easy, right? That they sold it.
Yeah, forget Obama. That's actually in your notes. That's a clause in your notes. That's a clause in your mortgage. So it's there. You don't need the Helping Families Save Your Homes Act. that just adds fuel to the fire. But it's already in your mortgaging notes.
So if I just wanted to do that, I should take that to small claims.
But that's not a violation of the FDCPA.
I know that. I know that. That's not it. But is that
would be an affirmative defense in your answer.
So that ain't no lawsuit, period.
No. All that is an affirmative defense.
Okay, and the last question is about the Westwell. I sent in a QWR. They sent me back, I think, half of an accounting of my account. So that's a violation of something, right? They should have sent me back my whole account starting from the day it was conceived to the end, right?
Is that what you asked for?
Yes.
And under what reason? Why did you ask for it? Just give me the
reason. It was part of the QWR.
I understand that, but a QWR, you have to have a reason. It's not just
because
part of the QWR.
Because I made three modification payments that I didn't see. Period. That's
there
not
you
being
go.
Accounted
That's
for.
The reason. Where were these applied? Please send me, the information. That's the reason. That's a very legitimate reason.
So they wouldn't have to send me a full account, another account?
Oh, yeah. Where it was applied, where it was removed, the interest, whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
So if I didn't get that, then what?
Then
that's
they
really
can't
proceed
with anything. Yeah, see, that's a lawsuit in itself.
So that's small claims or federal?
That's going to be federal.
Under RESPA, right?
Yep.
Okay, that's fine. I guess I'll figure the rest out. All right, thanks, Doc.
All righty, thank you.
All right.
He's got his hands full.
Yeah, he does. All right, we're going to go to 678. You are unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi, you guys. I spoke with you all about this case last year, and since that time, I had joined you all for a minute, but then I got busy, new responsibilities on my job, and I just couldn't follow it like I should have been able to follow it. So I had a lawyer in California. I'm in Georgia. I had this lawyer to try to file a lawsuit on my behalf concerning my mortgage, and I paid for it in March. He still hasn't done it, and they're gonna put my house up for foreclosure again in September. And my question is this: I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but how difficult is this thing to file yourself? To file a lawsuit concerning your mortgage? I paid this guy $3,500 to do it.
Well, you need to report them to the bar, your state bar.
Okay.
See how quick he acts. Tell him you want your money back. You don't want him. Because if he slacks this much, he's going to just keep on slacking. When you say
you paid him to file a lawsuit 5 months ago, and he hasn't done it.
He
stole your money.
Now.
Okay.
I don't want you doing it now. I want you to just give my money back.
All right. So, what can I do now? Should I file? Can I file shallow 13 or I forgot what y'all call that.
Chapter 13.
Yeah, I know it's chapter
skeleton
13, but
13,
I mean,
I think is what you're talking about.
Yeah, skeleton.
Skeleton
13. Can I do that? Just to stop this thing for right now until I can file it myself?
You can. Like I said, I don't know exactly what it is you got going on, so.
Well, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, tell me.
Well, what I was going to say, I don't want to take up all y'all's time about this because, like I said, I married into a situation where my wife, my now wife, but at that time, it was her and her mother. purchased a house, but her mother was the sole purchaser at the time. She was 85 years old. I mentioned this to you guys last year. Since that time, she has developed dementia, you know, extreme dementia. And we wanted to keep the place because I had sold my house in order to when I moved in with her. I mean, after we got married. So now I want to go ahead and fight these folks because the way they set the loan up originally, they gave her two mortgages. She was 85 years old when they did it. This was done back in 06. And she was 85 at the time. Now she's 94, I think. Yeah, 94, about to be 95. And my thing is this. I filed the 13 on her behalf at least twice, and during last year, and then I filed one this year. And when I filed it this year, I had already paid the guy $3,500 to go ahead on and do the lawsuit. He sends asked my wife yesterday or day before yesterday to send him the notice of the company that was handling the foreclosure. And I said, why would he want that? Because we sent that to him. Everything that we got, we sent it to him. And so now he's trying to call them, call himself to stop it. How can he can't stop it unless he files a lawsuit. That's what I thought.
Well,
am I wrong?
And that doesn't even stop it necessarily, no.
Yeah.
It depends on what type of lawsuit you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, if you paid him $3,500 and he has done zip, not a squat, what could he possibly do to stop it at this point?
Exactly. That's the same thing I was telling my wife.
Yeah, unfortunately, you've been too tolerant and waited way too long to do something.
Yeah,
that's made things. It's put you in a very bad position because you're just about out of time.
Exactly.
And you don't have the knowledge. If you had been studying all this time, you'd know how to do it. But there is no, I think the other moderators will agree with me. With you not having any of the knowledge, you said yourself you don't have it in such a short time frame, I don't know what you're going to be able to do. I mean, you've already filed another BK this year. And the big problem you have here is you're not the party. This 94-year-old woman that's the party. And you can't represent her. She has to be represented by an attorney.
That's what we told you last time.
Right, so that would lead to my question, Jesse. Would it be possible, and of course, if his wife has power of attorney, that's very
she does.
Key to all
it
this.
She does, but that doesn't
so,
matter.
Okay, so would it do any good at this point for her to file with the court an emergency TRO for the purpose of obtaining an attorney because she hired one who did not do the job.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's about
the
only alternative
the
you've got.
Very good, Terry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I can get her to file an emergency TRO.
Based on that fact.
Based on the fact that she, and make sure you include the details of the information. This, an attorney was hired. He was paid $3,500 X amount, whatever, to the penny dollars. He never performed any function or filed any paperwork. She is now faced with having to obtain another attorney to represent her. That, I don't see how a court could deny that. I really don't.
Well,
and
you want to put in there that the attorney was paid back in March, and he's had more than ample time to do something.
And she was not aware that he was doing nothing, that absolutely no services were rendered for the money paid.
Okay. Emergency people. Okay. And would she take that to the she would take that to the federal court, right?
No.
That goes to the state court.
Wherever they're doing the foreclosure.
Okay. All right. So emergency TRO based on the fact that this attorney has done nothing. Okay.
And been paid.
Right.
And been paid for it.
Right. And it was paid back in March. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important that you inform the court that the attorney was paid way back in March. You don't want to leave that part out because that lays a picture out of an attorney that's just left her hanging out to dry and lose her house and did nothing. He just basically stole her money. So do that. But now when she if you do this request for a TRO, that has to be in her name.
In my mother-in-law's
name.
Right. It has to be
And then with your wife acting as power of attorney on her behalf.
Okay. I'll get it done. I'll get it done tomorrow. Now, is how difficult is this TRO to do? Can they walk me through it if I can get down to the state court?
No. Nobody's
going to
help you do it
with you. Oh, man. All right. So I'm going to have to.
There's examples. Listen, there's plenty of example TROs right on the website.
Okay. Man. Well, some kind of way I got to get this done. Because
well,
I either that.
Get another attorney and tell the attorney, hey, this is what happened. And, you know, I need you to do this like right now, though, and get on with it. You know, and you can do it that too.
This guy right here, I don't know what his problem. You know, I don't know what his problem has been.
He's a lawyer.
Your problem.
Yeah, and you know what? You dropped the ball too, letting him get away with it this long, and the longer you let him get away with it, the more quiet he's going to be because he saw a sucker walk through his door.
He did. Yes, he did.
You know, yes, and I don't mean that to be critical of you, but...
No, I know where you're coming from with it, though. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
I don't have an issue with it. I do not have an issue.
Well,
totally
go in the
right.
website and you'll find those examples of TROs. That
okay.
They're not really that difficult to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, TRO, that's not something that I can wait to the last minute, though, and take down there,
no,
right?
No,
you don't wait. If you could put it in 5 minutes from now, it's not too soon.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I think that guy must be related to P.T. Barnum.
Man,
hey, also, don't forget, it's in your benefit to do an affidavit, okay?
Okay, so that's what I should do, an affidavit.
No, not you, your wife.
You, he does the affidavit on behalf of the leasing. I went and I tried to hire an attorney for my mother-in-law. I paid him $3,500 to get that copy of check on such and such a date, yada, yada, yada. So that way, he's testifying on her behalf now. He tried to help her. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Well, yeah, you could do that as well. Yeah.
And you should.
She can't do it. Yeah, she didn't pay him. So she can't. He did. Which is fine. It doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, the judge isn't going to pay to work.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter if there were five people trying to help helpless old woman.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, as far as mothers-in-law goes, I mean, I hit the jackpot, and I'm not just saying it. I mean, she's she's a great one. She really was. I mean, she helped everybody she could, neighborhood kids, fed folks she didn't know, that kind of thing. And for this to be going on, it's not right.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna do everything I can. to do what you guys told me to do. Thank you all so much, and I will go to the website again. I'm not a member now, but I'm going to become one.
There you go.
It's always pays to know ahead of time. That's why I always email you.
Yeah.
Week after week. Don't wait to the last minute. Be prepared ahead of time.
Yeah. You're right. Well, I'm there from here on out. No more of this other stuff, because, like I said, I thought 3,500, it would have been done, but it hadn't been. Now, he calls saying that, you know, he's going to call him and see what he can do to stop it. Well, you can't stop that.
Yeah, well, it's a day late and a dollar short. You don't need somebody like that.
No. He's a day late, and you're a dollar short.
Exactly. Well, I'm $3,500
short. Exactly right.
Yeah. Yep. So get rid of him as quick as you can.
I will. I promise you. Thank you so much, y'all. I appreciate it.
All righty. You're very welcome. Good luck.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Man, I hate to hear stuff like that. Boy, that just irritates the crap right out of me. You know?
It makes you
damn crooked lawyers.
Makes you want to just kick some attorney behind, doesn't it?
Got that right. All right, let's go to 845. You have been unmuted. Go ahead.
Am I on?
You are on.
Sure sounds like it.
Okay, good. Sorry, Dave, I called a couple of weeks ago because I was new to your site, and I said, listen, they're tampering with evidence, this, that, and the other. I've been through only an eighth of the phenomenal amount of information that you guys have, which should be a required high school learning requirement for people and everything, because they don't teach this stuff.
No,
but
they do not.
We agree with you.
We agree with you. Teach elder care law. They don't teach the things that you need to know in life. You know, which shame on them. But anyway,
it's intentional. That's not by accident, by any stretch of the imagination.
I know the judicial system is really I'm really having a hard time with that.
It was planned in 1910 at a meeting of the Carnegie Group. Other than war, how could they gain complete control over the entire country and all its money? And the thing that they came up with...
I know the Jekyll Island, too.
Right,
and
but the thing that they came up with at that meeting was that if they could control education for one generation, it would be a done deal, and that's where it began. They passed it in 1965, the Federal Department of Education, but it took them until 1975 to get complete control of all the public schools in the United States so that they could deliberately dumb down an entire generation. And look at our kids and grandkids. Do you think they were successful?
Hey, I got news for you. I do a lot with health. And Voltaire, which was from 1788, doctors are men who prescribe medicines of which they know little to cure diseases of which they know less, and human beings of which they know nothing. You know, it's just like, wow. Okay, I thought it was the banks, but it's everything. It's everything. Okay,
right.
So anyway, I'm sorry to get off that track. I'm new. I've only been with you guys for a month. I'm only an eighth of the way through it. I've let that grizzly bear sleep from 2008. I pulled my credit for today, and I almost fell off my chair.
I bet.
I was like, what? But anyway.
I remember being shocked.
Yeah, I was like, what the heck is going on? So anyway, I had my name in a newspaper. last year. It was October. I called up, you know, the first time I ever called up the plaintiff's attorney, and I said, listen, guys, you've been serving a dead lawyer, you know, just like drop this because you've been serving a dead lawyer. No, we're pursuing through it. I had a securitization audit or a loan fraud audit, and then I went, Jesus, I can't tell you how many laws that you have broken in New York State, and this is ridiculous. Had put it in front of the judge with 212 pages of exhibits. These idiots didn't give any exhibits and said, no, well, they should have let us know and da-da-da. Well, okay, I slammed that. I threw my whole case out there in January. Now, so she said, okay, well, you got to tell her to get a new lawyer. And I put in discovery request in February. Okay, I received the answer in June, which said, okay, you got 30 days. Tell me, what the hell are you doing? I received it in June. Okay, then I put in interrogatories in June. I still don't have an answer to that. Then I have a class action that I got from Bank of America, ironically, Saturday, which, you know, because these guys have been pulling credit reports, which is how I got the idea to pull my credit report from you guys. And I went, oh, my God, I almost had a heart attack again. I was like, what going on? You know, this is crazy. You know, I'm a good old school country girl. And when the first time I called you up 2 weeks ago, I says, listen, if you take the stamps that they have put on there and you line it up to the back of the note, they don't line up. And where the heck did the alarms go? So I'm in that phase. My question is, okay, I filed a BK-7 in 2011, which absolved me from all of these debts. The deed is still in my name.
No,
and I'm fighting like an idiot.
Huh? It never does. You never get absolved from your mortgage. You get absolved from any payments due up until the time you filed your Chapter 11.
I can't hear him.
Jesse, we can't understand what you're saying.
I don't understand.
That's
what we're saying, Jesse.
Like
we can't understand you.
It sounds like you're in a tunnel.
Yeah.
Is that any better?
That's a little better there.
Yeah, I'm in a hotel, so there's nothing I can do about it, guys. It just is what it is.
No, you're real clear right now.
Okay. What I'm saying is you're only absolved of your payments up and through the time you filed that bankruptcy. You're never absolved of the mortgage. They're not just going to write it off.
Okay, well, in 2011.
You a house. I understand all that. But they have however much time they have after the next default is done to come after the house. So whatever defaults up and through the bankruptcy, bang. The next default, the next payment due date you defaulted on it, it starts a whole new cycle.
Well, it's like the alphabet, Frankenstein soup, you know, pass-through mortgage certificates, this, that, and the other. And like I said, I had a securitization audit that said, well, you didn't file it in county records. Bayview isn't mentioned in anything, and all of these people aren't according to New York State law. I thought, well, and I wasn't doing it to be a jerk. I just thought that the second mortgage that had a blanket over this, which I was fighting so diligently until I got so sick, that they had the deed. Because Mellon never showed up. Bank of Mellon, formerly known as Bank of New York, as certificate holders for the alphabet soup thing, you know. I was like, well, okay, I had a handshake and agreement with these guys. Now, what they're putting in front of the courts now is it doesn't line up, so I'm going to get a microscopic thing to see, because the guy who signed it was the servicer for Bank of America being the vice president of Mears, and he
was
a
pretty much standard operating. So go study some more on the website; you'll get it. That's pretty much standard protocol.
Yeah, no, I'm only an eighth of the way through, and I, like I said,
yeah.
You guys should be a required thing, a required learning thing for people, because I've watched mock trials. I learned so much through your mock trial, just can't tell you.
Good.
I was
the whole point of the website, so it's awesome.
You guys are absolutely incredible, and you're helping everybody, and I'm like, because I was like, I'm tired of getting rocks thrown at me. I want to throw rocks back. And I happened to find you on Ben Lowry's thing, and I went, okay, let's see what the heck is going on here. And then I joined, like, 2 days later. I was like, okay, that's it. That's it.
Good.
You know. But,
so anyway, what's your question? Because I haven't had a question yet.
Yeah. Okay, now I've got the class action and everything to get involved with Bank of America, because they're pulling my credit, and I haven't really done anything with that. But is this stopping me? Is the bankruptcy in 2011 me from going forward?
No, of course not. Why would it? Like I told you, the day after your bankruptcy was discharged, everything starts over again.
Okay, so my timeline is actually from 2011 until today.
Yeah, unless, when was the bankruptcy discharged?
2011.
Okay. Well, you said you filed.
Well,
it. It was filed.
December
discharged.
Of 2011. In
okay,
New York,
statute
of limitation is 6 years.
Statute of limitations on what?
Mortgages.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because I looked it up on your website.
Okay, well, it's not on our website. That would be on a link to some kind
well,
of...
It's on a link
statute
from...
Yeah, in New
yes.
York. All right.
Yes.
So, it would be November. The next
December.
Then December. It would be December of this year.
Yeah, and we're in discovery now, and he's not answering my – I mean, like, I was going to put in a motion to compel, and I was like, no.
Yeah. Why not?
I put in interrogatories that has to do with the securitization, and they haven't answered it. I mean, first I
well, if you
I
want answers – yeah, if you want answers and you're not willing to compel – Why even do the interrogatories?
Well,
by law, they're supposed to answer them within 30 days. If they don't
do it,
we do a motion to compel.
Right.
I
even more
just
important.
Didn't want to wake up to sleeping grizzly bear because I'm only an eighth of the way through your website.
Yeah. I understand. But just remember that the statute of limitations won't really take effect till this case is gone. Because as long as you're in litigation, that statute is not relative.
If they hadn't filed a foreclosure action and they tried to do it after the 6 years, then it's a whole different story. But as long as they've already filed a foreclosure action, they've captured the statute of limitations.
Okay, so don't use that clause. Got it.
No, that's not going to be an argument you can make.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm pedaling as fast as I can to get caught up to you guys, and I'm like, thank God you guys are there and you're doing what you're doing, because it should be a requirement for high school kids to learn this stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, we agree.
We agree.
We agree wholeheartedly.
Okay.
Sorry. We had to learn civics before I graduated, but I graduated in 1970, and shortly thereafter they stopped teaching civics altogether. And civics is where you learn this stuff.
I did 74, so I know how old you are. Okay.
It's social studies instead, social engineering instead of civics.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy out there. Yeah, it's crazy. But guys, you guys are awesome, and
thank you
for doing what you're doing, and I've passed it on to 15 people, and it goes right over their head.
Of course.
Just because they really don't get it.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
shame
they
on
don't
want
to get it. They don't want to get
that,
it.
That's the problem. I don't know if chemtrails, the water they're drinking, the Kool-Aid, or whatever. No. But
programming.
Some will, some won't. So what?
Yeah, but thank you. And I still haven't been able to figure out how to post stuff on the forum yet, but I'll get there too. So
okay. Well, just get in there
and
keep studying.
I am like a bandit, and I'll pass the word around because you guys are awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All righty. Thank you.
Have a good night.
Terry, thank you.
You too.
You too. Before I forget, David, let me ask Terry. Terry, remember the email I sent you last week with the screenshots?
Screenshots.
Of 9/11.
And I told you that it was taken down.
Yeah, but I sent you the screenshots. And you said thank you. You actually responded to it.
Okay, I'm trying to remember what it was about.
The 9/11, the CIA agent.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Can you find it and send it back to me? For whatever reason, mine disappeared.
Okay, let me see if it's still in my box, and I'll do that right now.
Thank you. Appreciate it, sir.
All right, let's go to 954. You have been unmuted. And anybody else that's got questions, you better be getting on the stick and hitting the one key on the keypad on your phone. 954, you're up.
Good evening, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Good evening, everybody. Hello.
Hello.
How are you? We hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
I'm sorry. I have a quick question. I had a case that I appealed, and it was reversed and remanded. Thank you. The problem is the judge is not she's not partial to us, pro se, and she had a problem with the way I wrote a complaint because I had like 12 defendants. And then she told me to amend the complaint. I reorganized it, and she said she didn't understand it. She dismissed it without prejudice, and I was going to lose a lot of counts. So they told me that she said that she closed it. So then 2 months later, I reopened it, tried to reopen it, and she said no. Sorry. And I had dismissed 11 defendants, and I stayed with one. And she said she still didn't understand it. So when I vacated, when I appealed it, the appellate court said that, you know, she abused her discretion, and they made the first amended complaint stand. So now she comes back, and she's got the case again, and she's asking me to amend the complaint with no findings of facts, no conclusions of law. So I don't know if I should just put it back in the way the appellate court said, that the first amended complaint stood, and that if she wants me to amend it, to please provide the findings of facts and conclusions of law to guide me on what she wants. Because she looks like she's ready to, you know, she's going to say, okay, I gave you a second chance, and you didn't do it right, and bye. That's what I have a feeling she's trying to do.
Yeah, I'd have to see the paperwork to even make a comment to get any kind of an idea of really what's going on, to be honest with you. I mean, that's my perspective.
Me too.
I mean, you know, your description
it doesn't give us anything to chew on to, you know, point out, well, you know, you don't want to do this, you want to do that, or anything. We just don't have enough information to go on.
Well,
what she says are the problems.
Yeah, that's the problem. She doesn't say. She did it on the first time. She said she didn't understand it. And so then I reorganized everything, realleged everything, and, you know, as to these defendants. So she should have been able to understand it. But she dismissed it. But the appellate court thought that it was fine and said that the First Amendment complaint stands. So went back to the First Amendment complaint, not the Second Amendment complaint. So now she's trying to get me to amend it, but she doesn't provide findings of facts or conclusions of law, which when she first dismissed it after the First Amendment complaint,
well,
I asked her to do it, to tell me what was wrong with it. And she refused.
Hang on a second. Mm-hmm. If she issued an order saying you're supposed to amend it.
Right.
Then you need to respond and tell the court that the court has instructed the plaintiff to amend her complaint, yet has given no guidance as to the deficiencies in the complaint and how plaintiff is supposed to correct it.
Okay.
Plaintiff cannot read the court's mind.
Okay. All right. Because I also thought that or tell her, well, here the appellate court said the First Amendment complaint stands, so if there's a problem with it,
but
I need to find the facts.
What you want to do is you want to find out, you want to pin her down.
Right.
You know, you tell me exactly what the problem is here. You can't just tell me there's a problem.
That'd be a better goal. That's right.
Right.
Yeah, get the clarification from the court on exactly what her problems are with it.
Exactly.
The specifics.
I did that.
Well, do it again.
No, that's what I'm saying. I did it, and she just totally dismissed it. And that's why the appellate court said to her, she abused her discretion because she didn't explain. And here I am trying to, okay, if you don't understand this, I'll take everybody out. And now this is the only defendant. So all the allegations are to that defendant, and she still dismissed that. So they said, no, there's nothing wrong here.
Well,
you
got a crooked judge.
Exactly.
But you got to pin her
down. Right.
But here, what I'm trying to point out is you have to pin her down
and
tell her that the situation here is similar to the previous situation where the appellate court sent it back, and you would hope that the court would recognize that and provide clarification for the plaintiff so that they are not wasting the court's resources and potentially ending up having to go back to the appellate court again.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I would put in there.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd remind her, say, look, you either clarify it or I'm going right back to the appellate court. They already smacked you once. Do you want me to let them do it again?
Yeah. I want them to recuse her.
That without using those words.
No, I know. I know. No, I don't want to say that to her. Okay. Got it. That's what you just confirmed
what I was
saying.
Sure you do. You just won't.
What do you mean?
I said, sure you want to, but you won't.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
Yep.
That's what I needed. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you.
Okay.
Take care.
Jesse.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Jesse, I went back and the whole string is there. When I said thanks, what I was saying thanks to is when you said, I will send you screenshots of it tomorrow. Phone's dying. You got to read this damn thing. It never came through.
I'll be damned. Okay. Let me see if Cody can send it to me again.
That's why I couldn't quite remember when you said, well, I sent you the screenshots, and I'm like, screenshots? So I went and looked, and no, I never got them. I was saying thanks in advance.
Okay. All right. No worries. Thank you.
If anybody has questions, hit the one key on the keypad in your phone, please. Otherwise, we're done.
Yeah, if you find
them,
Jesse, still send them to me.
I will. I promise.
I don't see anybody
raising their hand and hitting the one key, so it would appear that we've had all the questions we're going to have for tonight. So, well, here we have somebody just raised their hand here. I keep telling people, don't wait till the last second to do this. Let's go to 773. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going this evening? This is Wayne. What's up?
How you doing, Wayne?
Just another week having fun.
Good news.
Good.
What
do you got?
My good news is I started law school. Very interesting. I don't know if you guys remember me telling you guys before that I was going to be doing this. So anyway, I have a law firm that's backing me on this, which is real cool. And they've been pretty cool. So, you know, I'm having fun right now so far. So far, so good. But
yeah,
I'm going to be going into a consumer credit. So,
hey, well, you got a long way to go before you get to specialization. I know that.
Oh, that's okay. I already got some skills, so. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about
great.
All the formal book work and all that, you know.
Oh, yeah. You know, I wanted to bring up something real quick here. You guys hear anything lately on the – I had something. I don't know what the hell I did with it. I had something about LiveVox, Human Call Initiator, where I understand that a lot of these debt collectors are going to be jumping on that system because they see that the a lot of the other debt collectors were winning on those cases, hands down. You guys hear anything about that recently or anything? Anybody?
I've had some conversations with somebody that actually used the HCI, and most of the cases that have been where they've won have been incredibly poorly pled by the plaintiff's attorneys.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not as much of a slam dunk as you think. If you bring a lawsuit against somebody and you do a lousy job of pleading your case and doing discovery, the other side's going to win, and that's in large part is what's been happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Same can be said for all the other statutes.
Well, that's exactly right. But the HCI is something, you know, that's one of the ways, that's the Human Call Initiator, for those of you that aren't familiar with it. It's a system, we've got one of our members that received a number of calls that he answered, and there was nobody there and for in excess of 20 seconds, and he repeatedly told him to quit calling and so on and so forth. And this company is saying, oh, well, you know, we're going to beat you because we use HCI. Well, he's got recordings of all the stuff. You watch and see what happens in his case. I think they're going to settle. But
yeah,
it'd be
great
if it went to trial. Yeah,
how far is that argument going
to
go?
Yeah, the HCI is a crock of crap, but we've got to have some people on the plaintiff's side in these cases that is doing proper discovery and is gathering proper evidence. And these cases that have been lost on the HCI issues where the defendants have been prevailing, it's because the plaintiff's side has been all attorneys that have had their heads up their butt and not doing their work. And they aren't doing the proper discovery and everything, and that's why they're losing. So it's the same old
song. I have a case right now that I got on hold. We had a motion to dismiss without prejudice. So I'm just waiting for it to get some ammo to word this thing up real good. We've got a pretty big case for that one. It's like 143 calls on this one. And in the state of Illinois, that can equate up to like $3,500 a call.
Yeah. Well,
but
here again,
sure that
the,
I'm on
the,
top of that
the,
before I hit it.
One of the biggest things is the gathering of proper evidence for the calls. If you don't have good evidence of the calls and very good documentation, that's a weak spot. And if you don't do proper discovery, that's the other weak spot. And that's what's been happening to people. They've had very poor evidence and or very poor discovery, and that's why they've been getting beat in large part.
Right. Dave, let me ask you this question, because I what I understand with HCI, with Livevox HCI, is that it is not supposed to be able to leave a voice message. It's not supposed to be able to leave a message, because what they're doing, when I'm finding out what cases that I'm reading, like POZO, for example, P-O-Z-O, that's a case that a lot of them are using, and with the Livevox. Mm-hmm. And what I'm finding out is that they're using the word clicker agent. They're saying that this clicker agent, but the key thing is that this thing still stores into their system. I got a copy of a Livevox HCI diagram that was sent to me by an attorney that, you know, that we put this case on, dismissed, so without prejudice, and I got to the end of this year to act back on it, so, you know, so it don't go away. But make a long story short, they're using the word clicker agent. They're saying that it was done manually, and another judge just ruled saying that it's not an ATDS as well, automatic telephone dialing system, for those who don't know what that is. So basically, you know, they're really, really hiding behind this thing big time, because I just had this information, and I have to find it when I get back home, saying that a lot of the debt collectors have found this to be very effective, and that they're, a lot of them supposed to be jumping on board with it.
It's logical. If they see that's slamming the door on plaintiffs, they are going to do it. I mean, you know, if you were in their position, you'd do it as well.
But the key thing is that for a lot of people that's on the call to know, just because they say now that they have Livevox HCI doesn't mean that they were using HCI when they were calling you. So, like Dave, like you said, it all depends on your discovery, how you hammer that discovery, because that's what's going to be very powerful and effective. You got to really pin them to the wall on that, with that discovery, because dealing with Livevox HCI, like you said, Dave, is all about that discovery without a shadow of a doubt. And you can't be a wimp when it comes to that discovery. You got to be hard on, and you're definitely going to have to get that protective order. And that's something else I wanted to bring up to you guys, because I know a lot of people on the call, you know, hear you guys talking about protective order. I've just heard one of the, I think it was on Terry's call, the last one, I believe, you guys, where I was listening to the recording, you guys were talking about protective order. I think you guys should do something so people can really know exactly how to use that protective order when it comes to discovery, and how it can help them when it comes to the other side coming back, hiding behind this attorney-client privilege and all this stuff. Because what people don't know is that when you ask for these companies, these debt collectors' manuals, when you ask for their manuals and policy procedures, blah, 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 one thing that everybody needs to know, if that law firm did not, if they were not the author, if they were not the one who wrote those policies and procedures, or they were not the ones who wrote the handbook or whatever, okay, the guidelines, whatever the hell it is, okay, that means that it is not a client attorney privilege. A lot of people don't know that. They have to be the author of that document in order to say attorney client privilege.
Yeah, we've got requests for production that delve into that very, very detailed method on that.
All right, cool.
That's some of the discovery that I sent in this case that I had, and this company wouldn't even talk to me about settlement. They were screwing around and fooling around and everything. They got my discovery, and all of a sudden everything changed, and they wanted to settle, and we got it done. So.
Yeah, I'm going to send you an email, because I would love to see that one, that document. I think that would help me on this live lots when I jump on this thing.
You've made some good points. But the biggest thing is, you have to go very deep. You have to be very specific on your discovery. And when you go back, if you carefully look at these cases that are being lost, and analyze the documentation and the pleadings and the filings in those cases, you can see that there are some real boneheaded moves where people have not covered the bases, and that's why a lot of those cases have been lost.
Okay.
It's just like this member that I was telling you about, that we've had discussions about this stuff. He has stuff right now. He's got numerous calls that he answered, that he's got recordings of, that were in excess of 20 seconds, and there's no person there. Okay. Now, do you really think a court is or a jury is going to believe that a human initiated these calls and then nobody picked them up? Do you pay your people to dial calls and then you never talk to a person repeatedly when they answer it and they keep saying, hello, 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 is there anybody there? Is there anybody there? You need to quit calling this number, so on and so forth. And this scenario goes on over and over and over again. Somebody's going to believe that that's not an ATDS calling them? I don't think any reasonable jury or judge is going to buy that. But this is the kind of documentation that you have to gather.
That makes sense.
So.
Okay, great.
Anyway.
That's what I want to put in there. I just wanted to put that little 2 cents
okay.
in there. So.
All righty. Well, thank you very much.
I've been on these calls, man. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, sounds like you've been busy.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Well, that's
right,
good.
Guys,
we'll keep
well,
you out of trouble.
It. You guys have a good night. Oh, yeah.
All right,
without
you
a doubt.
Too.
Can.
Thanks a lot.
Bye, buddy. Bye-bye.
Yeah, there's more than one piece to the puzzle in this stuff, guys. All right. We don't have any other hands up. Nobody's hit the one key on their keypad, and we're about an hour and a half into the call. So we're going to wrap it up for tonight.
Mention,
now, the first.
Yeah, David.
What?
David. Excuse me, I
yes?
want to mention one thing in regards to this last conversation that you guys just had, that an easier approach to client privilege is demand to see the privilege log.
Yeah.
That's the trick. Nothing
uh-huh.
more. They have to. Anything that's privileged information has to be logged in. Well, let me see the privilege log. If they can't show you that, tell them you're going to have to go to the judge and make them show him. But you can't hide behind the client privilege BS. It don't work. And you tell them
right.
as clear as I told you. Okay? So that's all it is. It's a very simple privilege log. That's all I had to say about
it. All right,
that.
Well.
To make sure you guys heard it. That's all.
Okay, no, that's great. I mean, that's why we're here to disseminate information and educate people. In the meantime, we did have somebody that popped their hand up here, so we'll go ahead and take their question.
Too
we're going to go to 6. Yeah, we're going to go to 609. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much. I was in the queue on my landline from when you first requested, and so I was going in and going out because it's what maybe I wasn't, but when you said you didn't see anyone, I said, well, let me try another line. Thank
yeah,
you so
well,
much.
I thought I saw a number that looked like yours earlier, but when I looked and there wasn't any more people with their hand up, that's where we call it a night. Did you have a question for us?
I do. I wanted to ask about when you're answering a foreclosure complaint, is it beneficial to say, for example, denied, it is specifically denied that any reference to a purported note is evidence of plaintiff's interest in this
yeah,
matter?
Yeah, when you deny. That's even a better because if you don't put some kind of logical reason behind the denial, the judge might look at that and just, you know, think you're full of hot air. Yeah, sure you didn't have a mortgage, or sure you don't have a note. But if you say specific, like you did, now you've given them a real good reason to take a double look, correct?
Okay, because in my stupid state, the superior court clerk can decide whether or not your answers are contested. And if you just put denied, they consider it not contesting answers.
Correct. Yep. So that's
okay.
why it's a good thing to always come up with something logical. That's right.
Okay. Now, you don't use the reference of a statute in answer, do you?
No. That would be an affirmative defense. Answers and affirmative defenses, right? So if you have some kind of statute there that's going to prevent them from doing something, then you could bring that up. But more importantly, if it's that strong of a statute, you might have a summary judgment on their butts.
Okay. And another question. If the complaint was 9 pages without a cover, 6-page attachment, how long should my answer be in pages, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Just don't make it ridiculous.
Yeah, just
okay,
if there's any restrictions on the number
there.
Of pages, be aware of that.
Oh, okay. And the, because I know someone that did a 100-page answer deliberately.
No.
Yeah, no, that's.
You don't want to go there.
The judge is just going to get so mad at that, that, you know, it doesn't make sense. Your answer should be very simple. The answers are, you know, deny and with whatever reason, and then your affirmative defenses is where you get into your little bit of explanation. So it shouldn't be anything, you know, longer than 3 or 4
okay.
pages.
You know, what was Dr. Graves' words? If you can say something with 3 words, don't use 10.
Right, exactly. Doesn't make any sense, too.
Because all you're doing is, excuse me, making it overly burdensome for the court to deal with.
Right. They don't want to read a whole bunch of stuff. They don't want to read a book when they can read half a chapter.
That's right.
Okay.
They don't really want to read anything, so make it easy.
All right.
Make
I'll,
it concise.
All right. Okay. And I just wanted to comment to the gentleman you were talking to earlier. His exchange was 973, which is a New Jersey exchange. And if he has a hearing scheduled for tomorrow, the last paper that could be filed in that, the date for that has already passed. So he's not going to be able to file anything in that matter on the day of the hearing.
Well,
I,
here again, we didn't know
I
exactly, was, you know, what the parameters were. It's, you know, you try and do something when you're at this late date, you know, you can try it, but chances of it being considered is pretty slim.
Right.
So, like you said, if you don't put it in enough time, that's not going to work.
Right. I don't know if he goes there, I wasn't sure if a hearing was scheduled or not. I know he said it was scheduled for tomorrow, but I still wasn't clear.
Yeah.
But
well, he said it was going to be heard tomorrow. So
whatever that
we don't know means. The specific circumstances.
Okay. Because in Jersey, when you file a motion, you need to pick the hearing date, like 16 days after the date you're filing. But I don't know what else he did. Just wanted to add that. So
okay. Well, thank you, dear.
Thank you very much.
All righty. You have a great evening.
You guys do too.
Okay, boy, we sure got a lot of noise from one of our moderators on here. Man, I don't know who it is, but it's one of them is making a whole lot of noise. But anyway, we're going to wrap it up, folks. I want to make sure that everybody knows that the next call is not going to be in 2 weeks. It's going to be 3 weeks from tonight on September 12th. There's a 3-week jump, and then there will be a call on the 26th of September as well. So please put that on your calendars. 3 weeks from tonight will be the next open call. Don't let that slip through your fingers and then be trying to dial in and get us 2 weeks from tonight, because we won't be here. At least I won't. Let's put it that way. If you are not on Terry's email list to get the reminders and the information,
about her Wednesday call that is now on Thursdays, send an email to queensongbird@gmail.com. Just simply say, please put me on the list. She will send a reminder to you. She won't. She doesn't send reminders out to everybody because of her constraints on bandwidth and email now that she lives out in the boonies. So if you have not been on her list, send that. She'll send you the information, all the rest of the people. You've got to go back and look in your records and get that information to find out about the number and the PIN and everything. But that's at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, Thursday. Then, of course, all the members get to use the website through the weekend to post questions and stuff. If you're not a member and you need information, well, I guess you better become a member. You can post questions in the forum. You can go study in the forum, and you can study in the rest of the website. It's all broken down by subject matter, whether it's foreclosure or taking their money, suing them, or beating credit cards, dealing with lawsuits, or cleaning up your credit. It's all in there. And it's all broken down by sections. There's webinars and everything else. Lots of good information there. You've heard some of the people on the calls tonight talk about how complete it is and how valuable it is. If you're not a member and you're not making it yourself available to absorb that information, well, then you're flying by the seat of your pants if you try and do something because you're not getting the organized information. But we finish up the weekend, and then we start all over next week. Monday night is Dallas Debt Discussion. That's still on TalkShoe.com. It's at 9 o'clock Eastern, an hour later. The PIN number is 54318. And for those people that were on my call last night that have gone to look for the call recording that isn't there, it's because I saw a message. I've repeatedly looked today. TalkShoe is doing a bunch of maintenance, and they said that there is a chance that the call recordings will be lost. And, of course, it's always nice to find that out after your call. But
yeah.
There is a fair chance that, there's a fair chance that the recording will be put back or put in the archives on the 54318 call, probably somewhere toward next weekend or even the beginning of the week after that. I just found that information out shortly before the call tonight. So anyway, that's where we stand. Jesse, you got the last word.
Yeah, just thank you for joining us on a call. Sorry about the little noise, but I am in a real nice city over here. I don't understand it. Anyway, God bless everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, guys. Stay sharp. You're going to need it.
Good night.
Appreciate
you
it, David. Thank you, guys.
You bet.
Good night.
Have a great evening,
bye,
everybody.
You too.
Thank you, David.